Joe Robinson is a work-life balance consultant and coach and author of Work to Live, The Guide to Getting a Life. He's also the founder of the Work to Live campaign. He's appeared on The Today Show, CNN, NBC Nightly News, and All Things Considered. Today, he's joining us to discuss what he calls the overwork ethic in this country. Joe, welcome to It's About Time. Thanks for being here.
It's nice to be here.
So why don't you start by defining what you, or describing what you consider the overwork ethic?
Well, obviously Americans have a very strong work ethic, which comes from our background, our Protestant work ethic roots, which is good. We're a very productive land, and at the same time, though, in recent years, over the last 20 years, I would say, the pursuit of production and getting stuff done as a goal in and of itself to the exclusion of everything else has become a problem. That's what I call the overwork ethic, where enough is never enough. And, you know, we've seen that work weeks have gotten longer and longer. We've seen that people have less and less time for their families, their friends, and their personal lives. And we also see vacations shrinking on the other end of this vice grip, with many people today not getting any time off at all, a third of all working women, according to one study, and a quarter of men. So we have to learn the counter-productivity of work when it gets to a certain level, which is where it's at right now. And that stepping back actually is not only better for our real lives, it's also actually better for our work.
So I'm curious as to what it is that made you interested in this work in the first place.
Well, I got into this as a result of my own particular passion for adventure travel. And to do that sort of thing, you need to have time to be able to go to other parts of the world and explore. And our puny vacations in this country were always a source of aggravation for me. And I'd bump into travelers from other countries, and you know, they were all, you know, off on their 5 and 6 weeks and so forth. And all the Americans are just like running and gasping to try to, you know, fit everything in and then get back to their return flight. So it always struck me as bizarre, because having traveled a bit, you know, I could see that these other industrialized nations were certainly productive nations. They had impressive economies, and people lived good lives and so forth. So how could they do it, and how come we couldn't? So that was kind of the entry point. I wrote articles on it. I got tired of writing articles about it. So I started the Work to Live campaign, which is now grown into actually my line of work, work-life consulting and coaching. And started this campaign to get a change in the law here, which is that we're the only industrialized nation without a minimum paid leave law that protects vacations. Here it's up to the employer to give someone whatever amount of time they want, or no time. There is no law whatsoever, as there is in Europe. It's 4 and 5 weeks by law. In England, it's 4 weeks by law. Even the Japanese have 2 weeks, and the Chinese get 3 weeks off. So we're just out there, you know, floundering in the basement on this issue. So that opened the door to a lot of things. I got incredible feedback from people about heart attacks they'd had at 35 and nervous breakdowns. And I realized there was a much bigger problem here than not getting time off, and that is people being worked to the breaking point. So I wrote the book Work to Live on what it is that makes us overwork and overdo it, and how we can get ourselves out of the box.
Now, are these other countries, and I did see, I think it was in an article or maybe in your book, that like the highest looked like Sweden, which we always look to Sweden. They have it so good. That their average vacation is 35 days. Is that really true?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, they'll get 5 weeks by law, protected by law, and then they can, by agreement with their employer, get another couple. So 7 weeks is pretty much the norm for Swedes. And by the way, that doesn't include the 2 weeks they take off at the end of the year, the last 2 weeks of the year, where the country pretty much shuts down.
Yeah, yeah. So are these other countries laughing at us, or are they beginning to follow our lead?
You know, they pretty much feel sorry for us. The word that I hear over and over again is barbaric when it comes to the description of our time off practices and our work practices. You know, if you look behind the myth, you can see that a number of these countries are very productive, and in fact, more productive per hour than the U.S., Norway, Holland, Belgium, even France in recent years. And yet they still have that time off that is important to bosses over there as well as regular employees. It's where they connect with their families. It's where they can get on the central stage of living and have great adventures. And none of them would turn back the clock. We hear every now and then stories about, mainly in Germany, about companies that might be having difficulties with their hours there, and they want to work more hours because they have overtime caps in Europe as well. But a lot of the thing in Germany is a result of them absorbing East Germany and some of the issues they've had there. And also the major problem there is they have a lot of holidays going back to the old holy days of the Middle Ages. So there's a ton of 3- and 4-day weekends. That's the problem. Nobody is ever talking about cutting back on the amount of vacation they have there.
Yeah, yeah. And when did we, like, what's the history of this? Have we been so different than our European counterparts since, you know, the Industrial Revolution? Or when did we start going astray with this?
Yeah. Well, we took the wrong fork in the road back in the 1930s, as it turns out. There was an attempt to have the U.S. have a vacation law like they do in other countries back in the 1930s during the Roosevelt administration, and a committee on vacations with pay was set up, and they reported back that it was a scandal that 30 other nations in the world at the time had vacations, and the U.S. Didn't have any law protecting them at all. And at that time, the Europeans and us were kind of comparable. It was like a week or 2 weeks off for people who had vacations, and of course there were many who didn't. But the recommendations of that committee went nowhere, and that was the last attempt some 70 years ago to try to get statutory validation for vacations in this country. One of the problems with not having a minimum paid leave law is that it creates a sense of illegitimacy about a vacation.
Right.
You know, it's not sanctioned by law. It's just up to the whim of your employer. And so it creates some of that sense that taking a vacation isn't legit, you know, and all the guilt that drives. And people abbreviate their vacations. They don't take it all and don't enjoy it when they're on it. So a whole host of things ensues as a result.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. After reading, I believe in your book again, that American workers give back 175 million vacation days, or they did in 2005. So I'm wondering, you know, if we're given, even if we were given the time, would we take it? Like, is it the culture or the laws that shapes us? Like, how do they interplay, do you think?
Yeah, it certainly plays a role, the culture, as well as the lack of a law. You know, we have people who don't take all the vacation time they get right now, even though it's not very much, because they feel there's too much work to do, or they feel that they might, others at the job might think they're slackers, you know. So we have this overlay of guilt what I call OCP, obsessive compulsive productivity, that prevents us from stepping back from the thing that creates our self-worth. We create the self through labor in this country more than they do in other lands. And as a result, when we pull away from it, we get jittery and antsy, and we don't know what to do with ourselves because we've been programmed to believe that the only value that we can bring to the planet is getting stuff done. And so that squeezes out a lot of the good stuff in life. And so that's part of, certainly a part of the problem.
Are you finding that when people hear you talk about this, that they're connecting to what you're saying, like, yes, yes, this is me, this is my life, or are you getting resistance to it?
You know, it's really amazing. You know, this stuff just lies very, very close to the surface. And when I talk to people and explain essentially the kind of con job that we all live under here, which is that the job is the only thing in life and that your life doesn't matter, people know in their guts that doesn't make any sense. They know in their guts it doesn't make sense that they have to work 60 hours a week and scramble and scrape for an hour to be with their friends or their families. They know that, you know, the standard of living that we tout so much is really a standard of non-living because nobody has enough time to do it. And they get it very soon after I open my mouth, usually, even on very conservative talk radio shows where the host thinks he's really got a live one, opens up the phone banks, and the vast majority, usually, you know, 70% of the calls are in my favor because it's such a clear injustice, the vacation issue in particular, because people do just work themselves so hard in this country, and all they want is a little chance to, you know, recharge and get their batteries juiced up again.
As one of those who are converted totally, I can't even understand actually what the argument would be, on, you know, on the other side. But I mean, I guess people have their thoughts about we may, you know, slip behind other countries and.
Oh yeah, that's the panicky argument on the other side is well, that's what's made us great is the fact that we work 80 hours a week and don't have time to live, and so we can never step back from that. But the statistics actually just bear that out as totally bogus. You know, when you look at the productivity stats, you see how productive they are in Belgium or Norway or France, and yet they still have their holidays and their vacations. You know, the two are really apples and oranges. You can be productive and have a vacation as well. Actually, the vacation enhances your productivity, and that's one of the main points I make is that studies show that performance goes up after a vacation, after a break of any kind. That nonstop banging your head against the wall is counterproductive. It racks up huge costs in medical bills, carpal tunnel, back pain, heart disease. You make costly mistakes, and your performance is mechanical when you never have time to step back and think about what it is you're doing or why you're doing it.
Right. So it sounds like, besides the fact that the laws don't support people taking vacation, that there is internal and external pressures for us to not do that. And I just wanted to spell those out a little so that we could think about what some of the remedies or strategies are for each, because it's going to be different. So when you think about like external pressures, you know, like you've talked about people in the workplace looking at you like, you're leaving now, you know, it's 5 o'clock and you're leaving. So what are some of the other external pressures on people not taking time for themselves?
Well, I think we have there's a state of busyness, the frantic, what I call hurry worry that people are in these days, and that sort of clouds people's mental picture, and it makes them believe they don't have time to do anything for their lives, like take a vacation. So it's important for people to slow down and understand that a lot of the rushing around is just habit at this point. It's the race mind that is driving us, and that they need to focus on time off as medicine, because it is. Studies have shown that an annual vacation can cut the risk of heart attack in women by 50% and by men 32%. So, I mean, it's phenomenal. It can cure burnout, the last stage of chronic stress. But it takes 2 weeks for that process to occur, so you need a real vacation with real time. So people need to understand the recuperative benefit and how valuable the time off is, and I think they'll be a lot more inclined to do it. Email and all of the technology tools also compound the problem, just because this stuff makes it possible to be in contact with everybody all day doesn't mean we have to do it. So the key thing that people need to do is set boundaries. They need to be able to put up a perimeter between their working life and their home life, or they'll just get blurred together, which is what's happening now.
And, of course, then there's the internal pressures of this is what makes me a worthwhile person, and all the messages that probably start as external but we've internalized. So can you talk about that a little, about
sure,
how you
yeah.
help people with that?
Yeah, there's a lot of fear and guilt. You know, the fear is I'm not worthy unless I'm producing, or I'm not okay unless I'm performing. And we just have to look at how unreal that anxiety is. We find that you know, you're going to be a better producer after a vacation because you're going to be recharged, and the studies are going to show that your performance is going to increase. So we know that's not true. The guilt is often a manipulation by coworkers and or bosses. And again, you have to elect to not let yourself be manipulated. And that is not real guilt, as the psychologists would say. That is unreal guilt. That is, you haven't harmed anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't punched anybody in the face. It's an anxiety that is brought on by the fear of what other people will think. So you need to bypass the guilt program and take the time for your life. Certainly when you look back in your retirement years, it's not going to be that 80-hour week or that year that you didn't take a vacation that you're going to celebrate. It's going to be the time you actually stepped out and lived your life on a trip.
For those of you who are just joining us, we're speaking with Joe Robinson, author of Work to Live, The Guide to Getting a Life, and we're talking about the overwork ethic in this country. You start your book, I know you have quotes throughout, which I find inspiring and really love some of them, but right at the front you have two quotes, one from Mark Twain and one from Alan Watts, and I have to tell you, the one from Alan Watts really touched me, and I guess it touched you too, and that's why it's there. So I wonder if you could tell me why you chose that. And I mean, if you have the book in front of you, I'd even love for you to read it.
Sure.
I think it's really powerful.
Yeah. Well, Alan Watts is one of my heroes. And he described the world we live in great detail back in the 1950s to an extent that is mind-blowing that it was written then and not now, in terms of our willingness to constantly choose to project our lives into the future instead of to live now, and how we devalue our real lives in its place, put all of the other stuff that we think is going to bring us happiness, toys and houses and cars and money and all of that stuff. So yeah, what he said was, unless one is able to live fully in the present, the future is a hoax. There is no point whatever in making plans for a future which you will never be able to enjoy. When your plans mature, you will still be living for some other future beyond. You will never, never be able to sit back with full contentment and say, now I've arrived. Your entire education has deprived you of this capacity because it was preparing you for the future instead of showing you how to live now, or how to be alive now. And that is precisely the conundrum that so many people are caught up in today, of constantly worrying about and plotting where their career is taking them and never thinking about where they are now. That is also an issue on vacation. I just did an article for the LA Times that ran this last week on this exact problem, how people do their vacations like their jobs, taking the work mind with them, trying to make it as productive as possible, always projecting the next item on the to-do list into the future. So you can never actually stand where you are right now and have the experience. And we know from the psychologists that life satisfaction comes from intrinsic things, you know, that you do for their own sake, like you can do on a vacation. And they're not about production, which is about external approval, what other people think. So it's very important point that Watts makes, and we really are missing our lives by constantly looking ahead to some point when we're going to have the right job or the right spouse or the right house or whatever, because it's all happening now.
Well, I am about to go on vacation. Now, when you talked about 2 weeks, boy, I can't remember the last time I took 2 weeks off. And even work environments that are supportive of vacations, 2 weeks, it seems like a long time to be away from your job. I know it's kind of bizarre looking at it from your point of view. But so I'm about to take my 1 week vacation. And I wondered, like, what tips you give people to help them enjoy or to fully enjoy their vacations?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I think that, again, you have to sort of go back and put your childhood hat on in terms of having the vacation really consist of playing and not producing and not jamming it with too many activities. Participation is the key. You get more out of it when you're engaged and involved. A non-judgmental attitude, being open to characters that come your way and activities, trying new things. As adults, we stop doing that. But this is really the engine of learning, and also these are the transformational experiences that we come back with that got us out of the rut of our normal lives that we celebrate and provide us with a real charge. So getting out of your head and into direct experience is a real key. Again, the research tells us that direct experience, where you're fully engaged in the moment, you're not worried about yesterday or what you're going to do tomorrow, you're just totally into the intrinsic activity, whether it's looking for seashells along the tidal pools, or whether it's taking a salsa dance lesson. That's when we're at our best. That's when it's Alan Watts once said that that life is a dance, and when you are dancing, you are not intent on going anywhere. You are there, and that's what it's all about.
For me, just not having a to-do list during my week off is a vacation in itself.
Exactly.
Getting back a little bit to the laws, do any individual states have paid leave laws?
No, not at this point. There was an attempt in Washington State to get something on the books this last year, but it didn't get out of committee. So this is something that is part of a larger effort by the Take Back Your Time group, as well as my group, Work to Live, to try to get the minimum paid leave as well as other time issues into the election cycle this year, and have people discussing this as one of these quality of life things that needs to be on the agenda. If we really are going to be about family values in this country, we need to have time for our lives.
Do you think that it hasn't passed because it's seen as not important, or it's seen as anti-business, or what?
Well, I think that it simply hasn't come up at this point. I think that it's not anti-business in any way. It actually supports productivity, as I mentioned, by increasing performance. And it also would be a great economic stimulus. That the Chinese started their three-week vacation policy to get people out spending money and traveling around the country. People were doing too much saving there. And so a similar thing would happen here. I actually had a Republican congressman's office try to get see if there could be a GAO study done on the economic benefits of a week off and how people might spend money, but GAO decided not to do it. But I've had interest from both sides of the aisle in Congress. There is support. We know that our president is a big fan of the four-week vacation. So I don't think it's out of the question. I think it's been sidelined for now because of other issues, but we see a lot of grassroots interest in this right now. There's more articles being written about vacations over the last couple of years and surveys being done on vacation time than ever before. It's certainly hitting a mass awareness level that I think can convert with political dialogue into some new paths for legislation.
And do businesses that you speak with, are they open to this idea of, say, your proposal of the 3-week paid leave policies?
Businesses are, they're reluctant. They're caught up in, the old mode of around the clock and we can't take a minute off. But there are more and more enlightened companies that are starting to see the benefits of more time off. And I have a few of them in my book. One company in Oregon, financial services company, added an additional week of vacation. They have 3.5 there now, and their profits doubled as a result. A company in Ohio with 468 employees added in a third week of vacation. They were able to cut out all their overtime because morale went up so much that their productivity increased to the point where they didn't need to do overtime anymore.
Wow.
And their profits increased 15%. So there are real benefits to doing this for business, and I see more companies as burnout is so epidemic, starting to look at maybe, this model we've been on of crash and burn, maybe that isn't the way to go.
So in wrapping up here, I wonder if you could give a few more tips to people. I know you addressed this idea of counterproductive work behavior, and if you could just tell us a little about that and maybe some ideas for people as we start fresh in the fall, what are some work behaviors that we can begin to change?
Sure, yeah. I think the one of the first things that people can do is in their daily work schedule to try to set boundaries. Say email, for instance, check it in the morning and in the afternoon instead of having it constantly interrupt you all day. You don't have to respond to everyone immediately. Try to qualify the incoming. What's the urgency of doing it now? What's the consequences of waiting? Try to take numerous breaks during the day. That's going to enhance your thinking process and your output immensely. It works almost every time you do it. Step back 10 minutes here. Get up on the hour, actually, to just move around so your body doesn't wind up with carpal tunnel and back issues and so forth. Find ways to set stop times on yourself. Pick a day, Tuesday, and say, I'm going to, go home at 6 on this day instead of 7:30 or whatever it is, and negotiate with your supervisor to set a couple of these stop times to try to get your life more in balance. Don't eat at your desk. Get out, move around, try to breathe in some new air and some new thoughts on your lunchtime. And then as far as getting more vacation time in their lives, I really recommend that people plan their trips well in advance, several months in advance, to try to lock them in for themselves as well as their employer. Try to go as long as possible, 2 weeks if possible, and to really leave all of the work stuff at home, including the laptops and the pagers and so forth.
Thank you so much, Joe. We've been speaking with Joe Robinson, who's the author of Work to Live, The Guide to Getting a Life. And if you want to get more information about the work Joe's doing, you can go to www.worktolive.org?
.info.
.info. Okay, sorry. www.worktolive.info. Thanks so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
As always, we welcome your comments and story ideas. Just email them to itsabouttimeradio@comcast.net. This show has been produced in association with Take Back Your Time, a national initiative challenging overwork, overscheduling, and time urgency. To learn more about them, go to timeday.org.